Joining me on the phone to talk about the challenges of becoming a 30-minute city is Professor Carolyn Whitman, a professor of urban planning at the University of Melbourne. So, Carolyn, can you tell us what is a 30-minute city and what is needed to create such an idea?
Well, there's actually two schools of thought about a 20 or 30-minute city. The first school of thought is about how to get commute to work times down to 30 minutes in either direction. And given the increasing population of both Sydney and Melbourne, the idea there would be getting much better rapid transport towards employment, assuming that a lot of people won't be able to live where they work. There's also the idea of local services within walkable distance. So basically, it's around focusing on access to schools, grocery stores, health services that should all be within a 20-minute walking distance. And those two ideas have sort of been clumped together in an awkward way.
Okay, so, I mean, is there ever a perfect time to transform a city's infrastructure to meet the future needs of the population then?
Well, ideally, it would be great to get the infrastructure right as people move in. We haven't been terribly good at that in Australian cities, particularly in the peripheries of cities where there's been a big focus on getting housing in without train lines, etc., in the early part of the 20th century, so about 100 years ago, private developers would assist in the creation of public transport lines as part of their marketing. For a long time, there was a focus on cars as the answer, but even if there were to be electric vehicles, the idea of individuals with individual vehicles just isn't going to work in cities of 5+ million, which both Sydney and Melbourne are these days.
Okay, so you're saying it used to be private investors, but who bears the cost of improving the cities and their livability now?
Largely state government and sometimes state government with the help of federal government and sometimes public-private partnerships, which means state government often assume the cost and a large amount of the risk, but the private investment comes from private development companies. There are pros and cons of each of those approaches, but the bottom line is that you need to have a clear idea of what your infrastructure priorities are and keep an eye on the expenditure to make sure that you're making good investments and that it's happening efficiently. Basically, the trick is getting affordable housing near where there's jobs and services and then getting jobs and services out to where there's affordable housing. It's actually easier to do the former than the latter. It's easier, at least in the abstract, to get affordable housing near where there's jobs and services than it is to try to get jobs and services to move out into poorly served areas.
Okay, so I have read that, Melbourne is on the uptick, whereas Sydney, partly because of obviously housing prices and, disruptive development and everything, is possibly not going to end up being, the major city of Australia in the future. What do you think about that possibility?
Well, population growth isn't the only measure of success, in fact, pretty far from it, but it is true that according to current population projections, Melbourne will be the most populous city in Australia again around 2050. It used to be the most populous city, and then for about 100 years, Sydney was a more populous city. The bottom line is that both of those cities are growing rapidly. And in order for them to be livable cities, environmentally sound cities, socially just cities, they need to get public transport, schools, and parks, etc., as people move in. And we're not doing that terribly well right now in either city.
Okay, so what do you think needs to happen?
There needs to be a much greater focus on getting affordable housing where there is good infrastructure, and sometimes there's a lot of resistance from those local communities that are concerned about heritage and concerned about there not being enough infrastructure as new people move in. So one thing that is happening in Greater Sydney is to look at infrastructure compacts where there's actually a written agreement that if more people move in, it's going to be timed appropriately with improved infrastructure, so more buses, more trains, expanded schools, etc. I think that's a really positive way for the future because state government is responsible for both housing regulation and infrastructure provision.
Okay, so what would you say, I guess, to community members who you know, will not be too happy about having, for example, if their suburb is only a few stops away from the city centre and it needs high-density development, how do you convince people that, you know, their suburb is going to be drastically changed? How do you go about changing those attitudes?
Well, the trick is that higher density can bring a lot of amenity. People are afraid that it's just going to be a high-rise tower and it's going to bring a lot of people in, that the infrastructure won't be able to keep up to with it. Again, I'd say it's the responsibility of the state government to create the kinds of conversations and then the kinds of actions that bring improved infrastructure in at the same time as increased population. The fact is that certainly in Melbourne, and I believe in Sydney as well, some inner city neighbourhoods are now the same population that they were in 1950 because there's much smaller household sizes. But that doesn't mean that the concerns about increased development without increased services aren't real. And as I say, there does need to be a linking in of timely provision of infrastructure, which can happen through various value capture financing arrangements to make sure that it's a positive future.